All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yeah, it's Friday, January 19th, 2018. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is what feels to be a balmy yet damp 30 degrees here in upstate New York. It's supposed to get up near 50 by the end of the weekend. I'm pretty excited about that. So where do we leave off on Wednesday? We titled the show Blockchain, ID 2020, UN, vaccines, Gates, as in Billy Gates, pandemic, DARPA, and bioweapons. And we took a look at a progression of things, blockchain, of course, being the digital ledger of everything. We discovered as part of this universal global identification system built upon the blockchain that the UN is pushing in cahoots with Microsoft and a company named Accenture, one of the things they're going to be tracking are vaccination records. Now, Bill Gates, he's been one of his big predictions, remember, because he was a 21st century Nostradamus, they called him, and futurism.com. But Gates, one of his biggest concerns is a coming pandemic. We had taken a look at some of the things that DARPA had been working on for their P3 anti-pandemic challenge. We're going to get back there at some point today. But we also had a story that talked about the U.S. bioweapons program that never ended, that is still continuing in some offshore mad science laboratories. These ones happen to be in the former Soviet bloc, run by contractors who have diplomatic immunity underneath the veil of secrecy. And that's like the type of stuff that X-Files episodes are made of. And I mean, this stuff, I wouldn't doubt that this stuff isn't going on. This is what I've always meant about down dark, long hallways. You know, you can't hear the screams. But there's no doubt in my mind that this stuff is happening. So we're going to continue looking at some of that and some of the things right now, some of the drums that are beating in the news, and kind of tie this all together. Because I really think that investing in a 30 or 50 pack of N95 masks and a box of 50 latex or nitrile gloves probably wouldn't be such a bad idea. All right, so anyway, we're going to continue on here. I found a story out of Singularity Hub. It's out of December 17, 2017, titled The Enormous Promise and Peril of Bioengineering's Pandora's Box. So we've talked before about CRISPR, CRISPR-Cas9, and yesterday I ran a rebroad that actually was titled DARPA, Gene Drives, Bill Gates, UN, CRISPR, and Chimeras. And we looked at some crazy things in that episode as well. But gene drives were one of the creations that came out of CRISPR that would allow them to push a genetic trait that they flipped a switch on or inserted or whatever they did in the lab with CRISPR across an entire population. Bill Gates had doubled down on his investment on CRISPRing mosquitoes with his anti-malaria campaign, and that's where a lot of that research came from. So they were looking at wiping out entire populations, not only of mosquitoes, which of course is going to affect the food chain. I talked about that a couple over the last few shows that aired, but also in New Zealand, we had talked about this once, maybe briefly. They are now working on genetically modifying mice with the gene drive technology to pass an extinction gene down through them. And I don't exactly remember what they were going to do, whether they were going to make them infertile or some sort of genetic mutation that they insert that won't let the children grow beyond, you know, a certain age. I don't know. But there's all kinds of different things that they could do. So, all right. The enormous promise and peril of bioengineering's Pandora's box. We are standing on the threshold of an extraordinary capability in synthetic biology. CRISPR-Cas9, which is the genome editing technique discovered in 2014, is at the forefront of this newfound potential for innovation. These advancements provide an opportunity to solve problems in the food supply, for diseases, genetics, and the most tantalizing and forbidden of prospects, and that would be modifying the human genome. Doing so would make us better, faster, stronger, more resilient, and more intelligent. And I always have to quote Kurzweil, and more sexy. And it is a chance to engineer ourselves at a faster rate than natural selection could ever dream. However, many experts warn of the dangers of these new capabilities, and a vast torrent of money is flowing toward biotech startups. And the race to be the first can encourage cutting corners. So this is just from a month ago. This is realizing it is still only January. CRISPR makes it possible to create the bioweapons that are carefully safeguarded by the U.S. and Russian governments, such as smallpox, or take an existing disease like Ebola, modifying them into an epidemiologist's worst nightmares. With these mind-bending breakthroughs that seem to be like science fiction or a really scary movie or book you read back in the 1970s, it can be near impossible task to discern hype from reality. But this is a crucial task for our politicians, who are overwhelmingly not scientists, to undertake. How can we realistically assess the potential risks and rewards? Now, a new study combines U.S. research with the U.K. research published recently in eLife Sciences to give an expert perspective on 20 emerging issues in bioengineering. The research sorted the 20 developments into time horizons, which would be the next 5 years, the next decade, and more than a decade away. That's how you do corporate planning as well. And in the next 5 years, they anticipate breakthroughs in artificial photosynthesis, as plants can turn carbon dioxide into fuel, and artificial photosynthesis could be crucial for the energy crisis and tackling climate change. While any scheme to deploy carbon dioxide removal, like Bill Gates said, we had to take one of those numbers down to zero, is a climate fix, would have to be huge. And recent studies have shown that artificial photosynthesis can reduce CO2 more efficiently than plants and convert it to methanol for fuel. We are running out of farming space. Well, how is this? All right, so we'll just keep going. And as the world population continues to grow, you better jump on board, because this is the way it's going to happen here, Jenny. And to feed the world, a new green revolution may be necessary. Enhancing natural photosynthesis through genetic modification may prove to be the answer, as the C4 gene is being engineered into rice. Since this gene could boost rice yields up to 50%, and since rice provides hundreds of millions with most of their calories, it is a huge potential development. Researchers also expect two major debates to begin in earnest over the next 5 years. The first is about the ethics of gene drives, which can force a population to inherit new characteristics. For insects such as mosquitoes, these genes can spread rapidly, and people who have mooted using them to render mosquitoes infertile. There we go. And at the same time, they could wreak havoc on ecosystems, echoing my exact words, and may have unintended consequences. Is the solution an outright ban on the use of gene drives, or can we find clever or devious ways to control these drives and deactivate them before they spread too far or after a certain number of generations? Well, this way, advocates argue, we can measure any ill effects before plowing ahead and re-engineering the biosphere. Skeptics, like Jewel, are not so sure. And I think we're going to use that to jump over to this next story. If you remember, back in February of 2016, James Clapper, who's the director of national intelligence at the time, came out in front of one of the, it was some Senate subcommittee, and announced that gene editing is a WMD threat. Easy to use and hard to control. So they're saying, oh yeah, it's going to be easy to control it. Let's let gene drives go. Wink. We've been developing this technology as a potential weapon. But Clapper comes out and says the intelligence community now sees CRISPR as a threat to national security. That is according to James Clapper, the U.S. Director of National Intelligence as of February 2016, who in the annual Worldwide Threat Assessment Report of the U.S. intelligence community added gene editing to a list of threats posed by, quote, weapons of mass destruction and proliferation, unquote. Gene editing refers to several novel ways to alter DNA inside of living cells, and the most popular method, which is CRISPR, has been revolutionizing scientific research, leading to novel animals and crops, and is likely to power a new generation of gene treatments for serious diseases. And if gene editing's relative ease of use is what is worrying U.S. intelligence communities, quote, given the broad distribution, the low cost, the accelerated pace of development of this dual-use technology, ding, ding, almost a double-edged sword, is deliberate or unintentional, accidentally or on purpose, misuse might lead to far-reaching economic and national security implications. Now, if you remember, we read about some of the bioweapons research that was going on in countries such as the former Russian nation of Georgia and Uzbekistan and some of these other former Eastern Bloc nations. And there were private contractors that were working on that research who were under diplomatic immunity. Of course, they were looking for ways to create plagues. And DARPA, interestingly enough, has been funding research into how to stop Pandemic X from taking hold within 60 days. Removing the viral threat, 2 months to stop Pandemic X from taking hold. This is from February 6th of 2017. So now here's a big question. Are we prepared for the next flu pandemic? Well, if you've been watching the news, they have been beating that flu drum. I've actually seen a few notices in the local news saying that if you come down with flu symptoms, the hospitals say don't show up there. They can't take anymore. And I just saw a story on AccuWeather this morning. And always when this set of words shows up in a sentence, you know to pay attention. For the very first time ever, the Center for Disease Control says that all 50 states in the United States are reporting widespread flu activity. For the very first time, never before seen, all 50 states. So, just yesterday, out of USNews.com, they asked the question, are we prepared for the next flu pandemic? I don't know, are we? Well, and doctors are already fearing another deadly super flu outbreak, so look out. All right, so as of this week, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention reports that there is a widespread seasonal flu activity in every state in the continental U.S., though calling the seasonal flu an epidemic, as it is currently dubbed, it is not uncommon. The reach of the current outbreak does exceed what the CDC has seen in more than a dozen years of tracking the seasonal flu, influenza, which is a contagious respiratory illness that can cause symptoms like body aches and a scratchy throat, can be mild or severe. And for those who are most vulnerable, like older adults or individuals with compromised immune systems, there's an even graver concern. And though its familiarity may lead you to ignore the threat, in less common cases, flu can even cause death. And I actually knew of someone whose spouse died from the flu. It can cause dehydration. That's one thing to remember. If you're ever sick, make sure you drink lots and lots of fluids, because dehydration is something that can creep up on you, especially if you're not feeling well. And it can cause your organs to shut down, and you'll get to a point of no return. So make sure you always drink a lot of fluids. Virus strains differ and affected year-to-year efforts to control the flu. But beyond seasonal flu, there's another threat that looms on the horizon for which experts say we are especially ill-prepared, and that is a flu pandemic or a global outbreak of a new influenza virus, like one of those never-before-seen ones. Some of the most devastating flu pandemics occurred between 1918 and 1919, and right about now is the 100th anniversary of that, when the Spanish flu killed between 50 and 100 million people worldwide. Not all the details about that pandemic spread, including the exact number of deaths it caused, are clear, but experts expect, but they will be in the future the next time it happens, because we'll all be on the blockchain. They'll be able to bag, tag, and track all of us assets. But experts today expect that the flu pandemic would involve a novel animal flu strain that is able to infect people and then go through a accidentally or on purpose genetic mutation or other change to the strain, becoming readily transmissible from person to person. That is the most likely pathway, and that is what we've seen in the past. It's typically the definition of a pandemic, is if it is passing from an animal to a human and then from human to human. So one of the stories, actually, that just reminded me, hold on, I pulled up a bunch of stuff. Doot, doot, doot. But I might have to sing until I find it. Oh, here we go. So that reminds me of something I found out of Homeland Preparedness News. HomelandPreparednessNews.com. Dated January 9th of 2018. How interesting that they say the most likely way of one of these pandemics to spread is jumping from an animal to a human. And they've known that for a very long time. That was swine flu, bird flu, monkeypox, I don't know, any of these diseases, or a combination of thereof. But DARPA now is a program that aims to predict, prevent cross-species transmission of viral diseases. The Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, launched a new program last week, so that was the very beginning of January, that aims to predict and prevent cross-species transmission of viral diseases to bolster military readiness. The program, called Preventing Emerging Pathogenic Threats, or PREEMPT for short, will explore how pathogens live, multiply, and evolve in animal hosts into strains that can infect humans. The ultimate goal will be to develop interventions that reduce the risk of emerging and re-emerging pathogens. Despite global biosurveillance efforts, viral outbreaks continue to outpace medical preparedness. That means that in volunteering to be the very first ones into harm's way, our service members can quite literally be the very first guinea pigs who are exposed to an emerging infectious disease that accidentally got out from one of our offshore biolaboratories, says DARPA, who wants to reorient preparedness efforts to make them more proactive so that instead of only modeling the trajectory of an epidemic as it spreads from human to human, we can contain and suppress the disease in the animal species. Species like a human, which they originate before they can make a jump into people. The program will develop multi-scale models and test beds that are capable of quantifying emerging and re-emerging human pathogens. It will also probe the evolutionary process for natural bottlenecks that can be used to prevent mutations and allow pathogens from jumping from animals to insects to humans, which they now have discovered is how they think the Black Plague spread. It was not from the rats. They think it was from the lice and from the fleas. That maybe we're riding on the rats at some point. PREEMPT researchers will study animals and insects. Remember, they had that Insect Allies program as well. In high-risk areas around the world, conducting lab testing to generate data. And weren't they just looking, we read about the bio labs in the former Soviet Republic. They were messing around with those sand flies as well. Conducting lab testing to generate data and sequence the evolution of viruses, evaluate earlier mutations, and use simulated natural environments, such as using artificial intelligence, to validate models over a 3.5-year program. If we are able to predict how viruses might mutate and spread, and take steps to prevent those mutations from impacting humans, or figure out how to make them more virulent, we will vastly diminish the possibility of future viral pandemics. So DARPA is going to make more information available about this program on January 30th during a planned event in Arlington, Virginia. So, okay, doctors are now warning about another deadly super flu outbreak. Now, it's in every one of our 50 states already. Doctors fear another super flu outbreak like the 1918 influenza pandemic that killed 50 to 100 million people. And there were so many bodies that they didn't have enough coffins. A century after the history's most catastrophic disease outbreak, which killed tens of millions as it swept the globe, scientists are fighting to guard against a new deadly pandemic. So there's no way to predict what strain or what shape-shifting flu virus could spread across the planet, or given modern medical tools, how bad it might be. But researchers are hoping that they are finally closing in on a stronger flu vaccine with ways to boost the much-needed protection against ordinary flu influenza and guard against future pandemics at the very same time. Dr. Anthony Fauci with the National Institute of Health said, "We have to do better and better by means of a universal flu vaccine." And that's some of that shape-shifting immune system stuff. a vaccine that is going to protect you against essentially all, most, or any strain of flu. And it doesn't matter what it's going to be. They actually want to go beyond the flu and just make it the synthetic immune system that protects you against anything, known or unknown. Labs across the country and in down deep, long, dark hallways in other offshore countries are hunting for a super shot that could eliminate the annual autumn vaccination for those people who get them in favor of one every 5 or 10 years, or maybe eventually a childhood immunization that could last for your lifetime. Fauci is designating a universal flu vaccine as a top priority for the National Institute of Health's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And last summer in 2017, he brought together more than 150 leading researchers to map the path. A few attempts have entered into first stage human testing already. And despite 100 years of science, the flu virus often beats humanity's best defenses because it is constantly mutating. Researchers are dissecting the cloak that disguises influenza as it sneaks past the immune system and finding some rare targets that stay the same from strain to strain, year to year. We've made some serious inroads into understanding how we can better protect ourselves, and now we have to put that into fruition, says a well-known flu biologist, Ian Wilson, of the Scripps Research Institute in Lojala, California. So back in 1918, there was no flu vaccine and it would not arrive for decades. And today, vaccination is the best protection, they say. Seasonal vaccinations are only 60% effective, and protection dropped to 19% just a few years ago when the vaccine didn't match the evolving virus at all. But if never before seen flu strains erupt, never before seen, it takes months to brew up a new vaccine. Doses arrived a little too late for the last, fortunately, mild pandemic in 2009. And if you remember, that was the one where Obama, I'm pretty sure that was Obama, used some sort of emergency act to open the doors because he said, oh, nobody is vaccinated because we don't have enough vaccine. Let's open the doors to the European vaccine, which had an unimproved ingredient as an adjuvant, and that was your squalene that they also had utilized in the Gulf War as part of that anthrax vaccine that potentially gave war veterans that Gulf War syndrome. But it had not been approved by the FDA. But under some of those emergency laws, and especially if a pandemic is declared, you remember we covered this at length on the show even back when that happened, once they declared a state of emergency, it just got rid of all those protections that are in place, and it allows them to use something that is quote-unquote experimental, all in the name of saving the many over the few who might have issues. So lacking a better option, Fauci says the nation is chasing animal flu strains that might become the next human threat. And today's top concern is a illegal bird flu that jumped from poultry to more than 1,500 people in China since 2013. And last year it mutated, meaning millions of just-in-case vaccine doses that are already in a U.S. stockpile no longer match the illness. While scientists hunt for answers, it is folly to predict what is next for the pandemic, says Fauci, and the Chinese H7N9 bird flu worries me a lot, says Dr. Tunnenberg. And for a virus like influenza that is a master at adapting, mutating, and evolving to meet new circumstances, it is crucially important to understand how these processes occur in nature. How does an avian virus become adapted to a mammal? Well, while scientists hunt for those answers, it is folly to predict what the next pandemic might bring, and we just need to be prepared. So how are they working and being prepared? Well, something that I was thinking about while I read this very next story caught my attention. A new story came out. This one happens to be out of NBC from the San Francisco Bay Area. Flu virus can now be spread from just breathing, says new study. So stop breathing if you want to stop spreading the flu. I always assumed that breathing around somebody who had the flu probably wasn't a very good idea. But on the other hand, what they're saying in the story is that they've always warned that covering up your sneezes and washing your hands after touching things around a sick person are probably the best ways to protect yourself. But apparently, they didn't think about just the aerosolization of the viruses called virus shedding that comes through the inhalation and exhalation coming out of the breathing passageways of an infected person. So new information released on Thursday, and that was yesterday, turns everything that we know about the flu on its head. And it comes from scientists in the Bay Area. Researchers with UC Berkeley, which wouldn't you figure it, and San Jose State University released details from a study that shows that there's new evidence that people sick with the flu can transmit the virus just by breathing. According to the study, people who have the flu, they cough or sneeze, and they release particles that are often with such force that it can infect others. The new research shows that even through breathing, some people could be releasing enough particles to make others sick, especially within the very few days of contracting the virus or getting a vaccination from something that has a live virus in it. It's called virus shedding. UC Berkeley researcher Jonathan Pilatic says that by washing your hands or covering your mouth when sneezing isn't likely to be enough to keep the flu from spreading. One particle is the dose, says Pentelic. So we can get infected by a single dose, and we have seen over 1,000 particles in a period of over a half an hour that can be released by breathing. They're going to go after your breathing now. This isn't good. Get your N95s. That's what I suggest. The study results, though I don't even know, the particle size varies. The study results, get an M100, do not suggest that breathing is the dominant mode of spreading the flu, but the findings could lead to changes across industries, even for architects, because they'll change the design of indoor spaces. Now, one of the things that I found interesting about the story and talking about breathing is that in that story about the diplomatically shielded biological subcontractors that the military was employing and all of these Eastern Bloc nations to work with pathogens in the biowarfare offshore programs, is that one of the things that they've been working on is finding ways to make pathogens more virulent by making them airborne and to be transmissible by inhalation. Ding, 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 ding. And there was a while ago that there were two or three publications that I admired, like Scientific American, Discover Magazine, and maybe National Geographic, that had all published stories back when being a zombie and zombie television was all the rage, and they were trying to sell the CDC and some of this preparedness for coming pandemic with this the zombie image. Do you remember that? It was zombie marketing. Zombie was all the rage at the time. But there were three stories that came out right around that time about hypothetically they had asked scientists how they thought they could engineer, and back in those days CRISPR really hadn't become all the rage, but how they could engineer some sort of bioweapon that could spread through the population and make the population literally like zombies. Now, what a horrifying thought that is. Hence, Clapper coming out saying that some of these technologies are essentially WMDs, and he would know as head of the National Intelligence Agencies, because we found out that some of the groups that were working with those contractor agencies on some of this biowarfare were actually doing the development for the CIA. Maybe his conscience got to him. All right, so let's get back to this passing this new virulent flu that spread all 50 states just by breathing. The study's results do not suggest that breathing is the dominant mode of spreading the flu, but this could lead to changes across industries, even for architects. How would we design indoor spaces that people spend time in and should prevent or reduce the spread of these kinds of diseases, says Paleotech. Dr. Ron Barrell of Atala Bates Summit Medical Center in Oakland says that research is encouraging and likely will cause medical experts to rethink public policy. So maybe they'll make you wear N100s out in public. So people are starting to go back to different ways of thinking about things. Are things transmitted that are more significant in the airways than we appreciated previously? The research team also found that not everyone who has the flu will infect others just by breathing, and how and why some people release more of the virus than others through breathing varies on several factors, and it was not part of the study. So, go figure it out. So, all right, talking about pandemics and the flu. If anyone had listened to the early days of this show, you remember me talking about a DARPA program that was called the Blue Angel Program. This is back when we first started discovering this genetic engineering, despite whatever kind it was at the time. And again, it was kind of before the CRISPR frenzy. But DARPA had announced that they were working on a program utilizing plants and some of the genetic modification technologies that they had discovered in plants to genetically modify tobacco to create flu vaccines. They were working, and I remember there was some early research on this being done at one of the universities in Texas and with DARPA funding. But then they partnered with a company named Medigeco, and they've done a lot of military research since this time. But back in January 26th of 2013, there was a story published. DARPA produces 10 million flu vaccine doses in just 1 month. And remember, this is all part of the same program that I had read or heard about through an organization that I've been involved with for this emergency preparedness for your town and community, where they talked about the universal flu vaccine. And we had come up with like a command and control center and ways to respond if a pandemic ever happens. And they got people together in the community. We all had assigned things that we would be responsible for. I was dubbed for the networking and communications, which is pretty cool, though. God forbid something like that ever happen. Talk about lighting a fire under your ass to have to get things done and become all MacGyver-y and stuff. But anyway, all right, so back from January 26, 2013, DARPA produces 10 million flu vaccine doses in just 1 month. A familiar news topic during the flu season is the difficulties the authorities face in producing enough flu vaccine fast enough to control an outbreak. That is a serious enough problem, but when influenza outbreaks turn to be part of a global pandemic, then hundreds of millions of lives could be at risk. Remember, Bill Gates had said that there were going to be, 33 million people that are all going to die in the next pandemic. So to combat this, and it'll bring our carbon numbers closer to zero. To combat this, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency has developed a new way of making vaccines and has turned out 10 million doses of an H1N1 influenza vaccine in a month in a recent test run. A globalized world means a world increasingly at risk from a pandemic, and according to the World Health Organization, 20 to 50% of the world's population is at risk from pandemics, such as seen in the influenza epidemic of 1918. So U.S. military forces are particularly vulnerable because of the nature of military life is perfect for the spread of disease unless countermeasures such as cleanliness and vaccinations are constantly employed. The problem is vaccines for new diseases cannot be produced quickly. And according to the World Health Organization, it can take up to 9 months to develop and put a vaccine into production. Worse, as egg-based and other conventional vaccine production techniques may not be able to scale sufficiently to meet the demand, especially for disease where two doses per person are required for adequate protection. DARPA's approach to solving this is their Blue Angel program, started in response to a 2009 H1N1 swine flu pandemic. Its purpose is to quickly develop practical countermeasures to disease outbreaks due to either natural causes or a biowarfare attack. The program has a number of aspects, such as finding ways to identify people, ding, 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 who are infected before symptoms show. And one major facet is the Acceleration Manufacture of Pharmaceuticals project, more affectionately called AMP. Working with Medigeco, Inc., AMP uses tobacco plants instead of eggs to produce recombinant proteins that are the keys to the vaccines. According to the company, introducing viral genes into tobacco has a number of advantages. The full-grown plants can be used to produce the protein, and it is produced in the leaves, and it avoids the need to procure eggs in huge quantities, and there is no danger of the virus killing the egg embryo. Medigeco says that the tobacco process can generate proteins within 14 days of gene sequencing the virus is being identified, and vaccine-grade proteins generated within 4 weeks. In the DARPA test, 10 million doses of the H1N1 influenza vaccine were produced in a month, as defined by an animal model. And according to DARPA, third-party testing confirmed that a single dose in an animal model produced the hemagglutinin antibodies as a protective strength. However, only clinical trials can determine how effective it would be on humans, and the entire process still needs FDA approval. But don't worry, because if there is a pandemic, they'll be able to use it even if it isn't approved if they declare an emergency. 100 years after the superflu pandemic killed millions, the universal flu vaccine remains elusive. And this is out of CBS News, January 18th, 2018. The descriptions are haunting. Some victims felt fine in the morning and were dead by night, and faces turned blue as patients cough up blood. Stacked bodies outnumbered coffins after centuries' most catastrophic disease outbreak. Scientists are now rethinking on how to guard against another super flu like the 1918 influenza that killed tens of millions of people across the globe. There is no way to predict the strain of the shape-shifting flu virus, and it could trigger another pandemic or give modern medical tools a run for its money. But researchers are hoping that they are finally closing in on stronger flu vaccines, ways to boost the much-needed protection against ordinary winter influenza, and guard against future pandemics at the same time. So labs around the world are hunting for a super shot that could eliminate the annual vaccine. And among these new strategies, scientists are making inroads understanding how we can better protect ourselves. And they are working on making a protection that is universally protective for everyone. But as DARPA is prepping for a pandemic, it has a brand new enemy. And this brand new enemy is going to turn this around on you and me. The brand new enemy is Trump. What do you do when the president is an anti-vaxxer? I can't believe they even put that in the title. This is out of Inverse.com. What do you do when the president is an anti-vaxxer? Matt Hepburn thinks about global pandemics a lot. And as the program manager behind DARPA's new pandemic prevention platform, that's that P3 platform we talked about a couple days ago, he looks at the way the world responded to Zika, the H1N1 flu that they just made 10 million doses from it to genetically modified tobacco plants, and the Ebola outbreak. And he sees room for improvement. I, he says, have been working on infectious diseases of national security significance, and my whole career has been based on the deep sense of apprehension that we have that these threats are out there, coupled with the fact that we are not prepared as a global community. Over the course of the next 3 to 4 years, DARPA, the military's advanced research agency, wants to develop a process that would allow it to go from identifying the cause of a major outbreak to coming up with countermeasures within 60 days. And that's that Pandemic X trial. The P3 program aims to develop an entire system capable of halting the spread of any viral disease outbreak before it can escalate to a pandemic status. But right now, it can sometimes take a year or more for drug companies to manufacture the medicine to combat an outbreak. It is not a good enough for us, and by the time we are even getting close to having a product, the outbreak is over. So what good is that, he says. We still have this great gap, and it is being able to respond expeditiously. Hepburn and his team are soliciting ideas on how to accomplish this, but much of it will likely evolve around DNA-based technologies, and the goal is that a person, once given the medicine, will be protected within a few days. The idea is to create a fire break, and that is the same as trying to contain a wildfire. If the healthcare providers can protect a huge amount of the population quickly, so step right up, that limits the rate of infection before it gets out of control. Yeah, it's going to be a gunpoint, people, because they want to protect the many to protect. Yeah, and who cares about the few who get hurt to protect the many? Protected, in this case, is a broad term used to encompass several stages of treatment. The developed medicine could be preventative, and it could even be used to mitigate the impact of a disease after exposure, but before symptoms emerge. And it could be a way to stop the disease from spreading, or it could be a full-on cure. So we're going to find lots of ways that we can convince you that this is necessary. At this early stage, Hepburn wants to cast a wide net and catch as many options as possible, just to make sure that everybody's on board. And what Hepburn is asking for is difficult, and he knows it. People think we're crazy. People say it is impossible. It is really hard, and we can't do this for all sorts of reasons. So let's manufacture a pandemic and make it happen and see what comes out of that. Because that's what I see coming in our future. But that is not how we knew this is a space the DARPA should be in, because we were supposed to push the community. We were supposed to put out a challenge. The program is designed to work equally well to combat a naturally occurring disease as well as the manufacturing of a biological weapon. Hepburn previously worked for the White House as the Director of Medical Preparedness of the National Security Council, where he worked across multiple agencies to ensure that the government was on the same page when it came to medical national security measures. He stresses the same is true of his position at DARPA, who relies heavily on the cooperation of the CDC and the National Institute of Health, as well as the private sector, where they're constantly trying to make you get vaccinated. And when it comes to the current makeup of the government, there is no shortage of critics who say that the Trump administration itself could be a public health catastrophe. If, for one, Trump himself has regularly spread discredited bogus information that purported a link to vaccines with autism and surrounded himself with people who believe the same. I don't know about you, but I saw some pretty convincing evidence in a presentation that I don't remember his name. It was one of the senators had received from a whistleblower at the CDC showing the link between some of the children that had gotten these MMR vaccines and the statistical significance of future autism that then the panel at the CDC threw into a garbage can. And one of the whistleblowers had saved it. And the congressman, not once but twice, reported it while broadcasting on C-SPAN. No, I don't remember his name. I'll have to look it up after the show is over and put it in the notes. But it was a pretty compelling speech, and there was a lot of evidence there, and he petitioned to have it heard in front of Congress. For another, the Trump administration is loaded with climate skeptics, which is a clear sign that Trump and his cabinet are willing to put ideology and politics before empirical facts. Now, again, I got to argue with that. There have been climate scientists who have come out and said, where have you climate fanaticists found that carbon dioxide is the greenhouse gas that is causing global warming? I am still going to argue that some of the stuff that I have seen about the manipulation of the electromagnetic spectrum and some of this plasma bombing of the sky and tinkering around in the upper atmosphere to propagate radio waves isn't affecting what is happening on the ground. There are research papers out there that talk about the ionosphere, manipulation of the ionosphere, and heating up down here. So I'm not going to say that climate isn't changing. I've said that before. It is changing. But I think they have the cause incorrect. You know, they don't talk about methane very often, but there's a lot of methane that is going into the atmosphere accidentally or on purpose. Some of it is coming out of the ocean floor with the melting of the permafrost, the floor of the northern nether regions of the ocean. And that is more critical than carbon dioxide. They're going to come up with technologies to suck carbon dioxide out of the air, make fuel out of it, make carbon nanotubules. We read about something about that at one point. But as they suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, that happens to be the food for plants. So I don't see how in this ecosystem where everything needs to be in balance, how depriving greenery of the food they seek, especially if it gets out of control, as they are CO2 mining, causing you to sell your carbon credits. Here, breathe into this tube, Johnny. We'll give you some bitcoins. Could be something like that. In 2014, so the dangers that approach can create in the face of a pandemic are very numerous. In 2014, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie quarantined an Ebola nurse from Doctors Without Borders, and I actually wrote a story about that at the time, and about your civil liberties. What happens when they put you into quarantine? So this is Chris Christie, but a quarantine nurse from Doctors Without Borders, who worked on the Ebola outbreak in Africa against the best practices of that organization into quarantine, and he went against the entire medical community. And when asked about politicians who put politics before scientists, before science, like Christie did, Hepburn declines to answer. But what I will say, he says, is that decision-making during a crisis is incredibly challenging. What we want to do is give people managing the response a tool in their tool belt. So outside of the government, scientists are sounding the alarm that Trump could herald a new era of a public health crisis. So we're going to have to come at you with guns because it's national security. Benjamin Z. Houghton is the director of the John Muir Institute of the Environment at UC Davis and worries about how the new administration can make the world more susceptible to large-scale pandemics and that these issues need to be looked at holistically. Anti-vaxxers who don't want to get some type of shape-shifting DNA vaccine are going to be the enemy because they're the one that could potentially be infecting us. We are already seeing climate change play in rising ocean levels, crop damages, flooding, fire, and drought, because all these orchestrated disasters are happening all over the globe, and it hurts human health, the natural ecosystem, and damages our economy. Without natural habitat, we lose one of the nation's first lines of defense against the spread of disease. Healthy and diverse ecosystems protect us from the spread of all sorts of viruses and pathogens. So let us just hack the planet and release gene drives and all this crazy stuff without our own concern for the ecosystem. So Houghton, the UC Davis professor, adds that Trump is waging an attack on the very idea of the commons. The greatest threat I see is on public goods, things that we are all benefiting from, and whether it is access to international scholars, clean water, air, healthy soil, or vaccines, the things that make us the U.S. that are so special are being completely disregarded. These are issues far beyond the scope of DARPA's new P3 program. Even those who are skeptical about the high-tech military office will likely celebrate any and all efforts to reduce the threat of global pandemics. The exact budget isn't yet finalized, but DARPA spokesman says that the similar multi-year initiatives range from $50 to $100 million, and the money that is well spent, if it works, can keep the public calm, wink, in the face of another Ebola-style outbreak. Just as important, though, are other more traditional measures the government takes to maintain public health. And for now, those also could be at serious risk. So how are they going to do some of this? Well, the CDC, we talked about this the other day. I think they were in cahoots with IBM and maybe some of the university systems. The CDC, as of January 2nd, 2018, out of NASDAQ.com, the CDC looks to distributed ledger technology, and that would be stuff like blockchain, to improve disease surveillance. On September 1st, 2017, the San Diego County Public Health Office issued a local public health emergency due to an outbreak of hepatitis A in the United States. Hepatitis A is a dangerous disease that attacks the liver and travels from person to person through contact with fecally contaminated environments. And the disease is often contracted via virus from contaminated food or water. The report states, quote, approximately 65% of the cases have been among people who are either homeless or use illicit drugs or a combination of those two factors. And efforts to address the hepatitis A outbreak involve three primary areas of focus. And that would be vaccination, sanitation, and education. Though no new deaths have been reported since October, the San Diego County officials have chosen to continue to develop a local health emergency status, and outbreaks in several other states include Michigan, Kentucky, Utah, and Colorado. The Federal Center for Disease Control, state and local health departments are charged with disseminating public health data so that those efforts can be made to control the spread of the range of infectious diseases. And given the prevalence of information systems in places with these institutions, this task has proved to be a massively complex undertaking. According to Jim Nasser, chief software architect at the CDC Center for Surveillance, Epidemiology, and Laboratory Services, the solution to this could be found in a utility of a blockchain. For a number of months, Nasser and his team have been pursuing several blockchain proof of concepts with the aim of building real applications in 2018. Most proof of concepts will focus on the delivery of better public health surveillance, and this means that an improved approach to the continuous semantic collection, analysis, and interpretation of health-related data needed for the planning, implementation, and evaluation of a public health practice. They're going to bag, tag, and track. As a result, the blockchain technology could be used to more efficiently manage data during a public health crisis or a related incident. Nasser believes that public health is a good fit for utilizing blockchain, and the success of the U.S. public health involves the ability of peer organizations, the CDC, the state and local health agencies, the hospitals, the clinics, to collaborate effectively and efficiently in terms of blockchain. The token or the currency for this method in the collaboration is your data. So your data becomes the currency to trade. Moving data from peer-to-peer in a secure, compliant, transparent manner is apparently quickly possible, and it is a key part of the business model, says Nasser in an article published in MIT Technology Review. As highly regarded healthcare innovation firms leading the design to develop the pragmatic use of distributed ledger, Hashed Health is playing an active role in addressing health delivery challenges tied to public health and disease. Disease surveillance covers a broad swath of activities involving sharing the local health and disease data nationally and internationally. But now with these advancements in blockchain technology, there's a growing interest in identifying surveillance solutions that offer greater utility and efficiency. It is where Hashed is advancing blockchain models that will serve as the platform for reportable disease surveillance. And the blockchain system can then serve three essential functions. One is for auditing. Blockchain has shown promise as a real-time audit log for the transfer of biosurveillance data, ding, ding, from reporting locations to centralized data repositories. Yes, this is the centralized, decentralized database. This form of permission-led blockchain system could lead to enable these transfer logs for all relevant and authorized entities. Transactions recorded include initial triggering of lab results, the capture of broader contextual clinical data from electronic health records, and then the fostering of a downstream analysis for a dashboard to give your risk score, is what I'm going to add, to identify disease-specific strains and genomic sequences. The blockchain can then also record relevant inputs to assess the efficacy of any medical countermeasure, including a patient recorded income outcome. Registry curation, and this would be to step right up, with the transfer of transactional data to a distributed ledger from various data sources, the blockchain essentially becomes a registry gathering portal, and this would be your dashboard. In this way, it can gather and connect critical data. Infection and disease distribution can then be tracked through key criteria such as patient name, geographic area, strain and type, health facility, and medical countermeasures. And then the very last but not least is countermeasure supply chain. In addition to tracking data on disease surveillance and outbreak, blockchain-supported biosurveillance can assist in the management and tracking of inventory and location of vital medical countermeasures such as vaccines and other pharmaceuticals. Distributed ledgers show promise in delivering effective, timely, and coordinated disease surveillance and response. And from this perspective, don't worry, because DARPA is also working on implementing some sort of supply chain blockchain. But from this perspective, the blockchain represents an exciting new development in a world where public health issues in one geographic location could threaten another locally, nationally, or even globally. Leaders at Hashed Health are excited to take a leading role in this space by encouraging experts, companies, and public health entities to collaborate on pressing public issues. And I think this is where we're going to have to end it up today. Blockchain will become the new backbone for the vaccine supply chain. Royce Fulton of the Denominator Group in Switzerland will test the value of blockchain, which is a decentralized secure database for stakeholders such as distributors and health workers to record and monitor the movement of vaccines along a supply chain to ensure the availability of sufficient levels of working vaccines. Following the route of a vaccine from the producer to the patient, and then also having the patient and all of their lab tests in the same database would ensure the safety and allow for better monitoring of stock and supply chain performance, which could improve vaccine availability and help identify ways to increase efficacy and lower costs. Remember, we found out the other day that they found a way that they could produce a bioweapon that would kill 625,000 people for just 29 cents a dose. All right, and very last but not least, IBM Watson Health teams up with the CDC to research blockchain. We looked at this yesterday. IBM Watson Health has signed an agreement with the Center for Disease Control, and I don't see a date on this puppy, to research the benefits of blockchain. And this is, in essence, an extension of what we've been doing this year with the FDA. And they are now working on exploring owner-mediated data exchange using blockchain. He added that the CDC will join the efforts in federal adoption of this emerging technology. The CDC has been running proof-of-concept trials on blockchain from a couple different companies, and this year it hopes of finding a more efficient and secure way to harness it and to help our federal health crisis. So, all right, guys, have an awesome weekend, and I will catch up with you next week. Goodbye.